Welcome to my podcast, and today I'm sitting in a lovely sunlit south-facing sitting room with David Reimel, who has been our archivist here at Highclere Castle for, actually I'm going to ask you how many years it's been now, David. You work part-time for us and part-time with Winchester, which is an extraordinary archive collection. So thank you, David, so much for joining me here today. I'm always in such admiration of your knowledge and all the work that you do, which is so ordered and so organised and so findable. And I sometimes feel the archives here are like some Aegean stable, which I can never actually make my way through. But thank you. How long have you actually been working with us here now?
I've been at the castle since 2009, although my first connection with Highclere was in connection with my work at Hampshire Record Office in Winchester, as you say, because in 1991, a branch of the family archive was acquired by the Record Office, and I arrived there a couple of years later, and in, I suppose it was about 1994, 95, I catalogued that group of papers, and that was mainly personal papers of the first three Earls of Carnarvon. And at that time, sterling work was being done here by my predecessor, Jennifer Thorpe, who was here for about 20 years, yes. And she was the first professional archivist to be involved at Highclere. And so when I arrived, she had already transformed things. So the muniment room where so many of the early records are still kept in their original tin trunks, which were all lettered in probably the 1850s when the muniment room was fitted up by the Fourth Earl's guardians. If you look inside, most things are wrapped in acid-free packaging, and that was all Jennifer's work. And she did the cataloguing of most of the items that were already in the archive then, and she did a huge amount in the way of gathering up material from around the castle and the estate and elsewhere. So she had done a huge amount by the time I already arrived. And then when she wanted to retire, my office was invited to suggest somebody who could go on a secondment basis, and I diffidently put my name forward because of the fact that I already knew a little something about the family from reading the personal correspondence, and I was delighted to be appointed to the role.
The Highclere Castle obviously has not always been a castle. Highclere Place House, maybe Highclere Palace in medieval times, and the archives pertaining to Highclere are held in many different places. So I think this house, this home, has been first recorded in 749 AD. And I know those records are at Winchester and the Bishop's Rolls of Winchester. So there's 800 years of history partly recorded. And then the Carnarvons were here. And then their family has added to the archive, created their own. And I think respected the history of those who came before. So in some ways, David, I feel that your role leading the archives here is huge. it's such an amazing home and so much beloved. And I always want to give rightly this home its sense of antiquity. I don't know how you feel what your role is here.
Oh, yes, because as archivists, we are very conscious that we are around for a fairly short time looking after documents that have been around long before we were and hope will be around long afterwards. And yes, as you mentioned, in Winchester we look after the records of the Bishops of Winchester and their estates, and the finest of those are what we call the pipe rolls, I suppose, because they're rolled up to look a bit like very large clay pipes, I suppose. And they are the fair copy annual audited accounts of the bishop's estates. And so for each of the manors, including Highclere and Burghclere, there is an annual account for, there's about 330 of them surviving between 1208-9 and the 1680s. And for each manor, for each year for which a roald survives, there's a record of how many piglets and lambs were born and how many had been sold or transferred to other manors, how many tiles and nails were used for repairing the buildings, what they spent on repairing the wheelbarrow, and all that sort of thing. And it really gives you an insight into life on a medieval manor. And for anyone who's investigating what the bishop's residence was like here, they are an excellent source, because nobody's going to be able to do an archaeological excavation to find the bishop's residence, because it's, we assume, directly underneath the castle. But somebody has been able to reconstruct what the likely floor plan of it was in William of Wykeham's time, when a lot of work was done to improve it in the late 14th century, simply on the basis of these very detailed accounts in the pipe rolls.
I love reading them. It makes me feel so good. It's all about mending and repairs. They're yes. making tiles. Yes. It's so practical and so encouraging, because that's all we're doing again today. And I find it completely fascinating. And sometimes when it's very dry, you can see some of the remains of where I think the orchards were. And part of my knowledge gleaned from studying some of the pipe rolls went into the Seasons at Highclere book. But it is an extraordinary home, and I think quite an important part of Hampshire's story, or Southamptonshire, which is called, as opposed to Northamptonshire's story, and the story of the people who've lived here for thousands of years. Quite extraordinary.
Yes, indeed, and many of the successive earls have been involved in the county in one way or another, involved in the militia or yeomanry. The fourth earl was Lord Lieutenant of the county for a time in the late 19th century, and Lord Carnarvon's father was chairman of the county council for some time, wasn't he? So there's been an ongoing connection with the administration of the county.
I think that's important, because I think for any larger home and community to work, you need to be embedded in your locality so that you try to do your best for it and get on with people within it. But it is extraordinary. I just wanted to ask you a question, because in some ways, I think your role is being a history detective. It's about finding things out. And that can be very exciting. I know that sometimes I've sort of found myself so excited, which not everybody understands. But is there something that you've found that is particularly exciting or made you leap out of your chair in being thrilled with the news?
What we're really hoping to find is more about the indoor staff, because that's what we're so often asked about. And when one gets sent a photograph of two or three staff members, and particularly if names are attached, and if you think, oh yes, now that's somebody I was asked about, now, oh yes, I can find the email asking me about that, and now I can reply to them saying, yes, after all, we have found something. That's really satisfying if you're able to do that.
I think it's building up a jigsaw puzzle, isn't it, from the smaller pieces?
It is.
But sometimes, David, I feel that when you and I start a project, we don't have the outside of the jigsaw puzzle, and we have to make it up from the smaller groups of pattern, which is actually much harder work, because we don't have the outside cover box to work from, and that's so often how I think of it. But there's no other choice than to get on with it, I think.
That's... Yes, and when one starts a project, one may not know how it's going to end up, that often you discover there are whole areas that are actually well worth writing about, which one might not have had any knowledge of before.
There are still envelopes in some of the folders and boxes which are marked miscellaneous, which is so exciting. So you still get that sense of finding hidden treasures in terms of words and writing. But on top of that, there's so much work to do still in the muniment room. It is immense. And in some ways, it's quite lucky that you have some of the papers at the Hampshire Records, because they might otherwise have been lost. And when I'm asking you for help in my research, you're brilliant, because you often know which direction I should be going in. So we've had many adventures together as well.
We have indeed, because as well as material in the castle and material in Winchester, there are quite a number of other places around the country where there are relevant papers. So because the fourth Earl was such a notable statesman, serving as colonial secretary in particular. His political papers are in the National Archives at Kew, and his personal papers are in the British Library, alongside the papers of many other statesmen of the time. So that's very convenient for students. And so we've had a number of trips to these locations, haven't we? And also the Somerset Heritage Centre in Taunton, which is the County Archive Service for Somerset. They have some papers of the third and fourth Earls, and of one of the younger sons of the fourth Earl, Aubrey Herbert, who was an extraordinary character, the person that John Buchan is thought to have based the character of Sandy Arbuthnot on in Greenmantle, the sequel to the 39 Steps. So yes, there are a number of places around the country. There's still whole sort of chunks that one hopes are going to turn up one day, because one could always do with more in the archives. Sometimes the precise question that we're thinking about, we can't find an answer to. So one hopes that somebody rescued something years ago and has got it at home and might be inspired to offer it back, which of course has been happening quite a lot over the last few years, which has been brilliant, that material has been reappearing here.
Yes, no, it has, and I'm so grateful, and I would love to figure out a way as well of putting more of it online. It's just, there seem to be so many tasks or challenges just now of just keeping the business afloat, but I would love to give some time over to working more in the archives, and there are many more areas of the archives to be organised, particularly those in infantry barracks, which are all over everyone. I think we need perhaps some help at some point in terms of interns to try to make some sense of it. But I find it incredibly fascinating and wonderful reading someone's handwriting. And I wonder today what they're going to make of what we do, all of us generally, because we don't write enough letters or keep enough diaries. And our phones aren't really intelligible by other people. And yet we take hundreds of photographs which we never take value from or distill down. I find the reading of those letters wonderful. And you get into someone's handwriting, I think. Sometimes I have to ask you. I'm into one set of handwriting and I swap over and I find another set fairly unintelligible. But nevertheless, the thought that somebody has sat where I'm sitting writing and this is what they wrote is extraordinary.
I'm conscious that I'm probably quite old-fashioned in still writing letters and keeping a diary using a fountain pen, and not so many people are doing that now. And one of the big challenges for archivists now and going on is how we deal with the mass of electronic material. People send so many emails now, finding a way of archiving them without necessarily archiving all the mass of notes saying, what time are you having your tea break, and that sort of thing, is a big challenge. And similarly, storage of digital photographs and making sure that digital photographs are labelled so that we know what they actually show. It's something which archivists are having to think about increasingly. And in fact, we've had quite a lot of electronic additions to the archive already here, as people all around the world have sent us scans of family photographs. But when I started, we had really very few photographs of former staff members, which was a great pity. There were a few, but not very many, and quite a few have come to light since then, mainly because children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren have emailed them to us, and so we are now building up quite a good collection, a number of which you've reproduced in some of your books.
Yes, I find that fascinating and wonderful. You begin to get a broader picture together so you could help other inquiries, because you've got other pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, which is, I've also started to print some of those out, because you can't actually reference them as well digitally as you often can when they're on paper, and you can actually see with your own eyes where something is. So with much of the research with the fifth Earl, I've printed out a lot of things which I have been sent digitally, and equally well tried to scan some of our paper photographs to put it on as a digital record as well. There are a moot point about how long those digital scans will actually last. They're not going to be lasting for eternity. And if you don't have another backup, you might lose them. So there are many challenges about how we look after our knowledge, such as it is, which I think also links into how we look after our history. It is quite a muddle at the moment, and I can't always see very clearly. But this castle is about visible history, isn't it? And about seeing and sharing. It is a delight when someone comes round, or you suddenly realise that that person was working here in the 19th century, so that is that person in the photograph, which is great. So anyone who's listening to this, please print out your photographs and label them with who they are, because otherwise your descendants spend their whole time filling in a jigsaw puzzle and may never fill it in. So that's so important.
Yes, indeed. And similarly, storage, as you say, storage of electronic material is quite a challenge, and what we would recommend is having three copies of everything, so that you might have one copy perhaps on a CD that you use for ready access. But CDs might not last many years. Gold CDs may be better than standard ones, but we still don't know how long they will last. Maybe one copy in cloud storage, one on a hard drive somewhere. But if you have three copies, preferably in different formats, then if you find that one of them has deteriorated, then you might go to your second one and find that that one, unbeknown to you, has also deteriorated, so you've still got your third one. And then, of course, you would then make two more copies at that point, that you always have three copies available.
Very interesting. And then equally well, when you open some of the muniment boxes, the box in the muniment room, tin, metal, you find some of the records there in parchment. Some of them are really old, but they're in very good condition, you know, because we had discovered as human race that parchment lasts very well.
Indeed, yes. Yes, and the further back you go, the more likelihood is that the documents we have surviving are those which people intended to survive, and so they wrote them on parchment, which is normally sheepskin, dried under tension, and so long as it's not exposed to extreme damp or extreme heat, it should go on and on for hundreds of years. And we're fortunate here that there is very little that's particularly fragile in the archive. There are a few letters which are fragile, but there really aren't many. Most of them are pretty robust, and perhaps partly because the muniment room was fitted up quite early on in the mid-19th century and has provided very good storage space.
People often ask me, you know, what's been the most surprising thing I've found out, or whether I think I'll still find out more. And the answer is there are so many surprising letters I've written, or the letter that, you know, I found in some of the papers from Martha Washington, or some of the old documents on parchment. And some of it is just that you read something with more experienced eyes, so you understand the import of it. So you see a signature in a book which you don't recognise, and then you realise it was George Etienne Cartier, part of the Dominion of Canada and Founding Fathers, or you see another signature which again you don't recognise. And to my pleasure, it was that of Saad Zaghloul, who was the first Prime Minister of Egypt. And again, that was not something I recognised initially. And then I found myself feeling so fortunate to be living in a castle which welcomed so many guests and created and supported so many friendships, David. I don't know, has there been something here which has surprised you or which you've particularly treasured?
I suppose often it's the little things that one finds in a mass of fairly routine details. So we have a large series of the estate ledgers which run through most of the 19th and the first half of the 20th century. Great, nearly A3 in size, beautifully bound in green leather probably, and they record all the income and expenditure in all the various parts of the estate's works, so the woods and the gardens and the park and so on, and work on the castle as well. And a lot of it is fairly routine, but is, of course, interesting if you're wanting to know about when a particular farmhouse was rebuilt, that sort of thing. But then sometimes you get these little nuggets of information about a new member of the domestic staff who was arriving and having their expenses paid from wherever they'd been living or working before. And you can sort of imagine them on that train journey coming with a small suitcase, perhaps, and somebody being sent to collect them from Newbury Station or from Berkeley Station when that operated. So you get that sort of sense of somebody walking into the castle for the first time. And then having maybe to sign a little piece of paper to sort of say that they'd been paid their expenses, and some of those we've got. And then sometimes the ledgers will tell you details about the features of the castle. So, for instance, the delightful door between the library and the music room, which when it's closed looks like a bookshelf with all these slightly giveaway titles, like The Key to the Mystery and that sort of thing. And one might be thinking, well, how would we ever find out when that was painted? And then suddenly in the ledger one day you come across a payment for sham bookbacks and you think, oh yes, there we are, yes.
I notice when I'm doing some of the social media, which I very much enjoy doing, it's the little details, it's the decoration or the wood carvings around a shelf or the stonework around a saloon, which I think people really appreciate.
Because this is very much an ongoing living house that is still a family home, it's important that each generation then continues to add to the archive. And I'm always on the lookout for if there are leaflets about events and so on to make sure I gather one up to put that into the archive and so on.
Well, you are very, very good. And I think I'm trying to, at the moment, expand, as you know, some of the archive rooms, because I find it easier to put, you know, all of Egypt in Orient, which I think does make sense. It's not finished, but better organised. And again, into Surrey, I was trying to put things about landscape and gardening and maps, which is very exciting that, you know, you and I have bought a map chest, which is wonderful.
That's a great improvement, yes, indeed.
Otherwise, they were on the floor. Yes, and I was conscious of how rare I think some of the maps are and how important. And this, at least, is a much better way of keeping them. And I'm going to turn the end room into a room devoted to Wyoming and my mother-in-law and her brother, Senator Wallop. And I thought I could put some of the memorabilia associated in particular with some of Geordie's American family in there. So the main thing I have to say I'm thinking about is what colour to paint it or whether to use a wallpaper, which is, I know it seems a little bit odd, but it's funny how the space you create helps create the atmosphere and helps create the order that perhaps you can put to some of our actions and histories within it. So that is the next project in the corner bedroom with the small... It was once a bathroom, but I thought perhaps the end room, suggested by a girlfriend of mine, interior design, thought the little end turret room could be like a little study, as if my mother-in-law was sitting in there. So I thought that might be quite a nice thing to do with some of her photographs of her beloved family around her. So it's just trying to create it so that it's a living history, not a dead museum. I think moving away from the idea of sometimes the word museum in the past has conjures up ideas of, oh, do I have to go to a museum? And I'm trying to always get away from that into something which brings history alive, which I hope Highclere and we have done.
Yes,
hope so.
Indeed. Yes. Yes. And speaking about Wyoming, I think there's a very interesting way of seeing that on one level you've got very much a local archive where there's so much about the castle, the park, the surrounding farms and villages. And then you've also got this great international interest that the family have been involved in so many different parts of the world, that the third Earl travelled in Italy and Greece, the fourth Earl, we had that very interesting connection with Canada, yes, and his role in the Constitution at the time of Confederation, and then later he did get to travel around quite a lot of Canada. The fifth Earl, of course, in Egypt. But then we also have the fifth Earl's log of his voyage just before his marriage in the 1890s across the Atlantic and going down to South America. So all sorts of parts of the world feature in the archive.
Yes. No, definitely. It's been really, really interesting to think of different ways of trying to share some of the stories. And I think travel is so important, understanding of... I think the author who said that he wanted his son to... He thought it was important for his son or himself to understand the pageantry of other countries through his own eyes, not just through black and white words on a page. And I've often thought that as he was guiding his somewhat reluctant son sometimes back to the schoolroom. Whenever I was writing that part of the Island of the Faroe, it did make me laugh. It was so unexpected, David. Just thinking of that, did you know what a checkered career the fifth Earl had at school?
Well,
you were probably more aware of it than I was.
Yes, one just gets glimpses of that from his father's diaries. It's just such a shame that he himself didn't, it appears, keep a diary, and he wrote so few letters. And the fact that so few of his letters survived, one wondered, well, maybe that's just sort of historical accident. But
I think Almina took quite a lot of the personal things with her.
That would be partly it, yes, yes. And also perhaps partly that it seems that neither he nor she actually enjoyed writing letters. Unlike the fourth Earl and the fourth Earl's second wife, Elsie, great letter writers, great diarists. But there was one letter that I came across in the Cumbria archives, which I went to last year when I was sort of trying to follow up one or two leads for your book. And it's a letter about a wedding present that a family member had received of... A sugar basin, I think, and there was no label on it, so there was some doubt as to who had given them this sugar basin, and they'd concluded it was probably the fifth Earl and Countess, but they said there's no point in writing to ask them because neither of them writes letters.
No,
and at that point I thought, well, this is why we aren't finding any.
Yes.
And so it's great that you've been able to use all sorts of different sources to tell his story in a way that he never told himself in sort of writing letters.
No, I think he wrote a lot to his agent Rutherford, but I don't think we had those letters because they were sent to him, so they disappeared with him. And then it was clear to me that he obviously wrote and managed his everyday life. I think he was so busy living and filling every minute of 60 seconds of life well run that he didn't always have time to write the letters that other members of family did. I suspect he may well have written letters to his sister Winifred, but again, when people move house, they leave the letters behind or get rid of them. And I think letters to him, I think Almina gathered up from little that I've read in their son's diaries quite a lot of the personal furniture and the desks which she'd brought here and took them with her. And I know that personally, you know, my mother, all the letters she gathered up because she wanted to read them, and she would have kept them. And those letters and things like that, records, were personal to the person who received them, and they were mementos and memorabilia. And then Almina, you know, rushed around from hospital to hospital. So I think for a whole myriad of reasons, they were too busy. I suspect there is still some letters to be found, but I'm not quite sure where to look for them. And they'd be filed under some other name.
Yes, one certainly hopes that, yes, that they will turn up. Yes, yes.
Quite a fun story. Since 2010, Highclere has really gained fame as Downton Abbey, and in some ways being part of the popular culture of that is also, I think, something to be added to the archives. I don't know what you think, David.
Oh, definitely, yes. Whenever a new series of Downton started, I tended to put up a little notice in the staff room back in Winchester saying, please save me any news cuttings about Highclere or Downton Abbey, so that the people then brought in bits from various newspapers, and I collected bits up from our newspaper and from the Radio Times and so on. So I've got quite a large box of cuttings about Downton Abbey, and I know that some of the staff here have been collecting things as well. So we do have quite a lot about Downton, and I have been talking to the castle general manager about the fact that it would be good to preserve at least some of the administrative files to do with the filming, and I know he has a lot of files on that subject.
He has a lot of files. Yes, John is a man of paper files.
Yes.
And I've actually archived and saved some of the emails and need to write down some of the more amusing stories in some ways, because otherwise I'll forget them, and I think some of them are quite where they make me laugh anyway. So I think that is so. There's something to be said for that as well. But we'll see where this journey leaves us. It's been an extraordinary journey for Highclere over the last, my goodness, 13 years now, isn't it? Quite extraordinary. And I don't know whether the journey's ended or not. So there we go. David, thank you so much. Often my next journeys to my next books often begin with chatting to you about where I go next. At the moment, I'm still living through the book The Earl and the Pharaoh and wanting to extend that out. But thank you for sitting with me today. Thank you for all your help and the emails that you answer at silly o'clock as well. I'm so grateful, and all the work that you do to answer everybody's questions here. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Lady Carnarvon. It's a wonderful privilege working here, and I'm really grateful to you and Lord Carnarvon for allowing me to stay here so long.
Well, it's our privilege working with you. Thank you, David.